Hey everyone, welcome to Recovery Rocks. This episode is sponsored by the folks at Sour Humanoid Vinegar.
And Sour
when I say the folks, I mean my partner who just started this amazing vinegar brand. Sour Humanoid is designed for cooking, created by a New York City sommelier who got sober after working at Michelin-starred restaurants and curating award-winning wine lists. This vinegar is an excellent way to make any meal special with very little effort. Check out some of the easy recipes at sourhumanoid.com. And we've had Nick on an episode before. He's, you know, a fellow sober entrepreneur, and we're excited to have Sour Humanoid sponsor this episode.
It's an amazing story, and I will give a brief testimonial just because I don't cook, but I have sent Sour Humanoid gift packs as gifts over the holidays to a couple of my friends who are big cooks, and it got rave reviews. So user tested, customer tested. And all thumbs up. Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome. It's Lisa. And I am here, as always, with my favorite hottest goddess.
Lady Gaga.
Today, she's Lady Gaga. So you may know her as Tawny.
Yeah, it's Tawny. It's Tawny. always good to see you, my love. You're my favorite human.
Same. Yeah, and we're excited today. We have a special guest with us today. Our guest, Jill Sirianni, is a co-host of the hit podcast, Frugal Friends. And Frugal Friends, Jill is also an LCSW. And the podcast she does with her podcast partner aims to change how we think about frugality, which Jill is going to talk about a little bit, but it's not, you know, frugality equals cheapness. And also I know a lot of us, and this was certainly the case for me, there were a lot of financial consequences from my years drinking and doing drugs. And, you know, a lot of it can be kind of a, where do I start? How do I forgive myself for blowing up all this money? All of those kinds of things. And Jill is going to talk to us about that as well. And one of the things that we really loved in seeing what she's doing is the idea that, you know, thinking about how our core values, our human core values, can really drive our financial plans and help us set and meet goals. So it's a really cool topic. We don't talk about money much on the podcast, and this is a really great opportunity. So welcome, Jill.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa and Tawny. This is quite a privilege for me.
Jill, where are you?
I am in St. Petersburg, Florida, Tampa Bay area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very cool. Yeah,
so we're from
all over. I'm in New York, and Lisa's in California. We're doing it.
Lovely, representing all the corners.
So Jill, tell us a little bit, tell us about the podcast if you want, how you got started and what's around that and what the idea really of frugality is in the world today and what it can mean for people.
Certainly. I started the podcast mainly because my husband talked me into it. And I had a friend, Jen, similar to the dynamic that the two of you have, where we wanted to have conversations about money and reduce some of the stigma that can come with talking about money. And we're just friends and we enjoy talking to each other, so we might as well record it and see where this thing can go. And for me, coming from the mental health background, social work background, and having it just experience not always making a ton of money and having student loan debt and other types of debt, it was just a real part of my life that led me to non-traditional living situations. And so at one point I was living in a motorhome, and during a road trip with my husband, I met my now co-host Jen, and she was writing in the personal finance space. She comes from the more research background, and investing is what she's really interested in. And so the two of us just decided that we would like to share our perspectives with one another and build a community that can also be reciprocal in learning some tips on how to spend better, save better, pay down debt, and just make finances more accessible for the common person. I was finding that there's so many acronyms and so much of the personal finance space and investing felt so gatekept and male dominant that we were thinking, it doesn't have to be this complicated. I don't think it has to be this complicated. And sure enough, it doesn't. It doesn't have to be this complicated, and it can be fun, and it can be fun with friends and community. So that's a little bit of how the podcast began. And I think you also asked about frugality. This has been a definition that has shifted for us a bit. We've been podcasting for about 6 years now, and I'm sure anyone who had listened to us from the beginning can see a bit of our own evolution, which is beautiful. There's freedom to change our minds and evolve our understanding of things. But we are at a place now where we are defining frugality as being good stewards of all of our resources. We're recognizing that we are whole people. We are physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, relational, financial, and that all aspects of our personhood intersect with one another. We can't separate one from the other. We're not fractured people. There could be ways that we can be aiming at well-being in each of these areas, and each one can positively impact the others or not so positively impact the others. And so when we approach frugality, we're not just talking about money. We are. A lot of our episodes are about money, but also how does money impact all these other parts of us? And how are we spending our relational currency, our emotional currency, our physical space around us, our natural resources, because they all play into one another.
Our and energy.
This, yeah.
I heard that. Yeah. We talk about our energy budgets a lot on this podcast and, you know, how we manage them and what we, you know, that we have to refill the tank a lot and, you know, that we need to, not everything is entitled to get the same amount of our energy budget as things that we prioritize. So is that, how would you say that kind of thinking translates over into the money space?
I think recognizing that we all have capacity, we all have resource and things that are entrusted to us, but it's not infinite. We don't have an infinite time. We don't have infinite money. I mean, you can always make more, but all of us have a set amount available to us now. And so when we understand this concept of how can I steward this well? How do I steward what's entrusted to me, my capacities, my money? This is what I have within my grasp and reach. It can really help to shift some of the mindset, narrative, our thoughts, understanding, emotions around it, and then, which we know will impact the behaviors that come from there. But certainly it begins with how we think about it, how we're relating to it, how we're feeling about our relationship with money, and recognizing it as a tool, a resource, something that is limited, but how can we be good stewards of it? What is the best, most beneficial way of spending or keeping or taking good care of these finances in a way that feels best and is aimed at well-being for myself?
And I mean, yes, we're talking about money, but I feel like we could also just replace like sobriety or mental health with like, you know, with everything that you just said. And, you know, I quit drinking to figure out my well-being, like you're saying. And there is such an intersection, you know, at this Venn diagram of sobriety and money, finances. And actually in my book, I do this exercise where I calculate how much money I spent just ballpark on partying. I was in the six figures of partying hard. And that's just not alcohol. That's, you know, party favors and cigarettes and drunken impulse purchases. And I know a lot of our listeners are looking for tips on how to deal with money when they get sober, whether it's creating a budget, whether it's, you know, the shame that comes from a lot of trust that's broken from either stealing money from your loved ones or figuring out how to even like, people don't even know how to invest. You know, people don't know how to save money. So I know I just threw a lot at you, but I'm wondering if you have any, you know, you come from this expertise of therapist and, you know, this financial expertise. So I'm wondering if you could help our listeners out a bit, anyone who's struggling with that Venn diagram of sobriety and finances.
Oh, it's a beautiful question. And I will say, I do think your listeners most likely are very uniquely positioned to make just some solid financial decisions for themselves. And here's why, because my tips are going to start with looking inward, and it's going to start with some of that mental health work and recognizing really our backgrounds and what led us to some of the decisions that we've maybe made in our past, and wanting to aim at well-being. I think already being in this space, already listening to this podcast, and probably putting in some of the work towards being the best version of yourself and valuing yourself is really where we recommend most people begin with finances. And so a lot of times people come to us just for the behaviors of finances, and we try and go back to, we're going to have to understand our relationship with money, our story, the reasons that we have these habits and coping mechanisms that we have. And so if you're already on that journey, rest assured you are like so many steps ahead of others who just want to talk about personal finance. Yeah. So I say that as an encouragement, because that goes back to us being whole people. When we are improving ourselves in one area, it is going to have a positive, beneficial impact on these other areas. A lot of times we'll talk about exercise, because that can be something a lot of people can understand. Usually when you start to see yourself getting into an exercise routine, it can make us want to eat better. And now we want to get outside in nature. And now we're looking into other self-care practices. And similar thing, when we're starting to do good things for ourselves, it can be this really amazing snowball rolling down the hill, collecting more snow and turning into an amazing snowman. I don't know why I made that reference. I live in Florida. We don't get snow here. Maybe it that's why.
It works. Yeah. Holiday time is perfect.
So I think that's really where we want to begin. I know sometimes that doesn't always feel like a great tangible tip. And if we want to put pen to paper, that's where the tangibleness can come in, of understanding what are the decisions that I make around money? How was money talked about growing up? How have I felt towards money, the amount, my income, my spending? The next step from there, aside from all the other mental health, emotional health work, and I will say, sorry, I'm a little bit all over the map, but I do want to make this note very clear. If any of your listeners are still in a point where they're very early on in their recovery, and it is just kind of one step in front of the other, and mental health is of utmost importance, and we're still trying to figure out who are my solid support people, who has my back, do that first. Like, that is so much more important than getting the best budget ever. Being and aiming at the person that you want to be mentally, emotionally, relationally is going to set you up for the future. So before we hop to behaviors, I think getting a good care plan in place is going to be first and foremost. From there, though, when you feel ready to really be looking at and tackling your finances, one of the first steps that can be really helpful is going back and looking at a 90-day transaction history, just kind of how have you spent money. And the reason that we say 90 days is because month to month, things can look so different. Things pop up. One month is not the same as another, but 90 days can really give us a good sense of what are some of the unusuals, what are some of the typicals, and be able to see, where is my money going? From there, we also like to encourage people to do an additional category of journaling alongside the transactions. Doesn't have to be lengthy, but bullet points. Can you remember what came before that spending decision? How did you feel about purchasing that item, that food, you name it? How did you feel after? And this is to help us kind of discover, are there emotional triggers? Are there relational triggers to spending? How did I feel about that spending? Did it lead to guilt and shame? Or was I really pleased with that? Am I glad for that? Does my spending feel like it aligns with the things that I say are important to me? All of this is just curiosity. We are not encouraging anybody to look at this and say, I should have done that, I should have done this, or that we totally have to change a ton of things, just to really understand our behaviors and what goes into some of our spending transactions so that we can come to a place of identifying, how can I bring my spending more into alignment with the things that I say that I value? How can I be a better steward of these resources that are entrusted to me that I have earned? You probably worked really hard for that money that you're spending. And so it's going to include both your fixed expenses and your discretionary expenses. Like, don't rule out your bills, your mortgage, your rent, whatever it is, because that plays into our values too, that we can look at. Do I still like living in this location? Is this worth it to me to own this vehicle, or you name it? That's a really good place to start.
So everything you're saying is basically being more mindful and being aware of your shit. I mean,
yeah.
Which is like, and that's just like a very like log line of all the beautiful stuff that you just said, because it's like, we get asked these kind of questions a lot. Like, how do I change our relationship with alcohol? Like, I quit drinking, but these problems haven't gone away. And it's like, well, yeah, it's like, not drinking is actually a really small part of my recovery. There's so much more. And it's this, you could say the same about money. You could, everything you're saying also reminds me of people in eating disorder recovery, where it's like people have to change their relationship with food, figure out those learned behaviors before they can even address eating a balanced diet. Like, a balanced diet is way, you can't start with that. And people download these like 60 day, 90 day diet programs, and it's, they give it 10, even a week maybe, and it doesn't work. And it's because people want these quick fixes, whether it's a shot of liquid courage or a sale, that a dopamine rush. So if you're listening and you're feeling discouraged by all of this work that the three of us are clearly doing, that's why we say one day at a time, right? It's, you have to really give yourself grace. And I appreciate what you said about how you have some people that come to you that want help with their finances, but people in recovery already have a step ahead because you're already examining some of that work.
So huge.
Yes. And to know that you are working on your financial self if you're working on your mental health. Like, again, all these things are going to play hand in hand. So it's okay to look at one thing at a time. We don't have capacity to do everything. And then when it inevitably doesn't go the way we want it to, that's when that guilt and shame can come in. And that is not conducive at all for well-being in any of these areas.
And how do you think about, like, with the guilt and shame? I know, and I'm guessing there are a lot of other people out there, not unlike me, you know, I grew up in a home where there was, everything was great, except the only thing my parents ever, you know, got into it about was money. And so I grew up with this like fear of never having enough, right? And that, and for when I, you know, I've been in California for 4 years, but when I was in New York, for 30 years, I, you know, this was a theme for 15 years with me and my therapist, because no matter what would happen, and I was really successful in a high paying job and all of these things, but I was like, I know I'm going to die unhoused alone on the subway stairs. You know, how do we sort of think about, if there's anything you might advise people to not, like me, who catastrophize around it?
Yeah, I think what you're describing is it, in that looking at your own history how did I grow up? How was money explained to me? What is my understanding of finances? How do I feel about it? Just thinking, oh, I want to be able to spend better or save or invest. What kinds of feelings does that bring up and why? One of the things we love to talk about, both in the mental health space as well as now this personal finance space, is practicing curiosity. And the reason that we term it this way, because we want to just be fact finders. We want to be curious about our experience and what has happened for us. How has that led to where we are today? So often we can jump to these statements about what it means before, like we jump to meaning making of, I should have done this and I should have done that, the guilt, the shame, all this and that. But to back it up, like 10 steps before that, and just be curious. One of the ways that we can do this is by asking ourselves the what, the how, the when questions, and avoiding the why. Why is not bad in and of itself. Sometimes why can be really, really great. But when it comes to understanding ourselves, sometimes it can put us in the straight on the defense. You know, there's such a different posture when we say, why did you spend so much going shopping versus what is it about shopping that I enjoy so much? What can I learn about myself, right? I'm asking the same question, but yeah. One is pure curiosity. I want to know more about me so that I can value myself, so that I can make decisions that are going to be aligned with my personhood versus this, I'm just jumping to conclusions, I'm making assumptions, and I'm shooting all over myself.
I'm really glad that you, A, have this podcast and that it's by women, and B, that like you make these, you make this money talk so approachable, because money is, we all, it's just so freaking taboo. And it is like, the one thing that we're all thinking about always, like whether you're super rich or very or poor, like we're always thinking about money. And I remember when I was trying to learn about money in my early 30s, I was raised by a single mom. Like we were very broke, food stamps. I mean, like, and like scarcity. So like that has informed a lot of who I've become. And I'm, you know, working on it. But I remember when I was trying to learn about money, I was like, I subscribed to Kiplinger's magazine.
Yay.
And I hated it.
Yeah, that's like, it's not for you. It's not for us. Just like, I ordered a bunch of bibliographies to my doorstep.
Yeah, no, like I was like, everything
that's
was
so
written.
You though, thinking like, I'm going to get the authority on this, yes, and I'm going to learn it all.
And if you're listening and you don't know what Kiplinger's is, it's like, you know, one of the top money magazines, or I don't even know if it still is, but it was. And I was just like, you know, there's a picture of like, it's always some old white dude on the cover, and you see the little author photo of all by everyone's byline. And it's like all these like old white dudes. And I'm like, they're using these words that I don't know. Like I'm not even at a 101 level. Like I need remedial lessons on how to spend. Like I'm not even trying to invest. I don't even know what a 401k means. Like I just need to know how to put one foot in front of the other. So, yes. And you know, this was like when I was newly sober, this was 2015. This is before there was a lot of resources like what you've created. So I'm wondering if you could maybe speak to that. Why men, why have men dominated this conversation for so long? And just thank you for saving us.
We can all just sit in wonderment on that together. I don't know. And I still now there's acronyms that I don't know. And I'm learning more and more. They don't matter. I swear it's job security. Like they want to make it seem complicated so that the rest of us think we have to give them our money to keep.
It's a good point.
Doing
I like that.
Their thing yeah. with it. Like really as if there's point. Some secret club. And no, there doesn't need to be. And it is wild to me that it is so male dominated because it's something like, now don't totally quote me on this, but something around 80 to 85% of American households, it is the female managing the money of the household. So women are managing money and doing it well, probably could use some more resources from voices that sound like them, but I don't know why we're seeing just so many. I mean, I guess it's why anything when it comes to like male-dominated spaces. I don't know, because they just said, this is ours and we're taking over and we're like, okay,
or to, maybe to use your framework instead of why, what is it about the male voice that we are also fascinated by?
That's the thing. Yes, a man says something and we're all just like, oh, it must be true. And a woman says it. And I don't know. We're going to fact check her. I don't know. Cute little hobby you got over there with your podcast. Yeah. Cool for you. So one of the ways I talked about the evolution of our understanding of frugality, and you're reminding me that one of our evolutions in the past couple of years, we used to talk about how our podcast is about saving money and paying down debt. And while it is still about some of those things, it's also about teaching people how to spend. That you are highlighting this beautifully, Tawny, that spending is a skill that most of us were not taught. How to spend, because we make spending decisions every single day, most of us, every single day. And yet we often can think that personal finance, or especially frugality, is just about how can I hoard and save and keep and never spend. And that's just not reality. We have to know how to spend well. Where's the best place to put my money? How does this feel for me? How am I able to get the things that are really life-giving, enjoyable, non-depleting with my money? And where am I being sold some lies and myths about I need to spend money in order to have enjoyment? Where can I find other alternatives to spending here so that I can really spend it here and still get the same level, if not more, enjoyment on these other things without spending? Most of the things that truly matter to us don't cost money, although it's going to take money to be able to have some flexibility and opportunity to engage in those things.
Well, and, you know, something that I'm really grateful for in my recovery is, you know, I have spent and still spend a significant amount of time figuring out the societal pressures and societal norms that I've internalized about substance abuse, liquid courage, yada, yada, but also money, you know, credit cards. We're like, we turn 18 and we're not taught about, I was not taught about credit cards. I turned 18 and then like, I got one. I had no idea. And then I didn't know what to do. My mom didn't know how to manage her money. So then I learned how to not manage my money. So in my recovery, I've also had to unlearn money habits, identify where they came from, realize that I don't want to keep them moving forward. But like, just like a tangible example of, I turned 18, I got a credit card. I went on a girls' trip to New York City and got a cash advance on my credit card. I didn't know what that meant. It took me years to pay that off. And like, why, like, it feels like we need legislative change, because these credit card companies are really just taking advantage of people, offering this stuff because we were uneducated, you know? And like, yes, my parents should have taught me, but they didn't. So now I'm stuck with this debt. Like, it just, the system is broken. Can you fix that for us, Jill?
You know, we can start. We can surely take a huge chunk out of it today, probably. It is wild, even when it comes to student loans as well. We're passing out $30,000 to $100,000 loans year over year to 18-year-olds who, by the way, couldn't even get a car loan if they tried on their own. And yet we're like, sure, here's this loan for your degree that who knows
that you will never pay off.
Yes.
Like, so realistically, like, you're probably not going to get a job that will pay it off. I'm sorry if that sounds negative, but the majority of my friends have massive student loans and they're not making enough money to even get by, let alone pay off their debt. And these are people that are juggling multiple jobs, working a full-time day job, plus juggling other jobs just to make ends meet.
Yeah, it can feel so debilitating. I think as with most things, when there's macro level issues, meso, micro level, like what's within our control? Certainly we can advocate for macro level changes on some of these things, but also what's within my power, control, influence, and what's going to help me live the best version of my life as possible. Certain things certainly are outside of our control, but I think what can get the most of our time, energy, attention, resource is whatever we can bear influence upon. And a lot of times it is some of the, it's the internal work. It's the aligning wherever possible our spending with what we say we value. Sometimes it does mean, are there ways that I can make more? Like sometimes we can't out earn our spending. Sometimes it is worth looking at how can I implement better habits with my spending. And from there, if we're just identifying we can't make these ends meet, then that might need to be one of those additional questions of what are the heavy hitters in my finances? Am I spending more on housing and transportation than maybe I need to be? Is there a big change that I can consider there? And is there something that I can consider to earn more income? I definitely want to push back on hustle culture or making people feel as though they always need to be looking at ways to earn more. But if the struggle's real, and most likely you've got some skill sets and you could be potentially earning more, then that's something to look at as well. But I definitely don't want people to be burning themselves out on juggling three different jobs and still wondering how to make ends meet. But
well, and that's
what
like
could be considered. Yeah.
Slightly tangential off of this is like something else that artists, creatives, entrepreneurs are not taught that we have to figure out on our own. Let's say we identify these skills, you know, how do we set our own rates? How do we advocate for those rates? How do we, especially women, how do we say, no, I deserve $500 an hour for this work? That's fucking hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the ways that we do that, even just with our podcast business, is we start at one level as our, hey, we're still kind of trying this thing out, seeing if it sticks. First person who agrees to that price, awesome. The very next time we try and pitch it to someone else, it's going to be a higher price.
Yeah.
So you can just, you can kind of titrate that, although in the opposite direction, and just kind of keep incrementally. Somebody said yes to that price. That means someone's going to say yes to 10% more than that price. That's also, though, where I would encourage people to find community that's going to be mutually beneficial. As we talk about maybe small businesses, people in these spaces trying to build their own businesses, we found it really helpful to find others who are in similar places, whether kind of right alongside of us or maybe even those a few steps ahead of us, to be able to speak into, brainstorm with, problem solve. There's so many benefits to community. We see it with the Frugal Friends community. Of course, communities of all shapes and sizes. It can be such a beautiful collaborative effort. Even if you're the only one who owns your small business, finding others to help support and brainstorm and problem solve. And I can
speak firsthand on how Lisa has helped me with that. I mean, I get opportunities like, hey, will you come speak for this? Hey, can you consult for this? I'm like, Lisa, what do I charge? I don't know what to do. And it's like, she tells me, and I ask, I have other sex writers that I'm like, hey, you know, Cosmo's paying this right now. What are you getting from, you know? So it's like having these really frank conversations are helping. Sorry, I cut you off, Lisa. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and breaking that taboo, like we have communities around support for our recovery or, you know, so a lot of, you know, maybe there's, you know, even something as obvious as, you know, a school moms group or whatever, you talk about these real things, but this is like the first I'm really thinking about a community like a Frugal Friends community. Like I think a lot of our listeners will probably want to check it out, where it's just like, okay, it's not taboo here to talk about money. It's a reality, and we're not going to treat it like any other community. It's just like any other community. It's and in fact, it's a really important one because it's such a big, you know, part of it's essential in our lives. There's no, you know, there's no getting around that.
Well, and it's kind of like Jill said, people that she's working with, that like people in recovery are already a couple steps ahead because we know, we know peer support. We know the value of peer support and asking for help already.
Yeah, we're big on that. So Jill, you are on Recovery Rocks. And of course, as you know, I mean, this conversation, I can't even say how important this is and how it has been. It's really, we really appreciate this, but we must know the music. And it can be, we talk about, we do Music Minute, and it can be music that you find relevant to this topic, music that just inspires you now or has in the past, or any what you're listening to now, anything. So tell us about your music.
This is such a fun question. And actually so timely because my husband's a musician. And he just had three of his friends in town for the weekend, just jamming and recording all weekend long. So I feel like surrounded by music already, which is so fun. So some of my favorite music is the stuff he puts out. But
What's his band? Can you tell us his?
So he doesn't have a band currently at the moment. He has put out different music on Spotify. His name's Eric Sirianni. One of the songs he wrote for me is called To Love, and it's on To Love by Eric Sirianni. Oh. That's not actually what I meant to highlight, but
We asked.
Yes.
One of my favorite bands and go-to albums is Thrice, is the band. Oh, goodness. Now I'm going to blank on the album. I'll find it. And it just is so raw and gritty and one of those super helpful when just feeling all of the feels and emotions. I would say it's hardcore, kind of screaming adjacent. It's the most I can get into hardcore, but it just hits in such a good way.
We like screaming adjacent.
Yes. I mean, Lisa and I bonded over recovery and rock and roll. That's why our podcast is called Recovery Rocks. So
beautiful.
Yeah.
To be everywhere is to be nowhere is the name of the album. Thank you.
Ooh, that's that's what we say like in publishing too. It's like if you say your book is for everybody, it's for nobody.
Yes.
Like you have to identify like your niche, who's your target audience, because nothing's for everyone.
Oh, it's so true. And I'm continually learning that lesson. Not everyone's gonna like me.
That's fair.
It's okay.
And that's fine. But the people who do like you love you.
And I just know the same is true for both of you.
Jill, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find more of your work? It's going to be in the show notes, but just go ahead and let them know.
Awesome. Yeah. Frugal Friends podcast. You can listen on anywhere you're listening to podcasts. And then we do put out a newsletter 3 times a week, which each day of the week has something different. Like Mondays, we're giving out freebies or telling you where you can find freebies, like free food and just free stuff. Ooh. Wednesdays is a spending or savings hack. And Friday is a money mindset shift. So kind of something hopefully for everyone in the different
so it's for no one.
Yes. That's somebody will find themselves somewhere. Frugalfriendspodcast.com, and you can sign up for the newsletter there.
They can sign up for the newsletter there. Yeah, great.
We call it the friend letter because that's fun.
That's great.
I want to subscribe to that. I need these tips. This is so great.
I think a lot of people do. And it's just, I have to say, I really appreciate like having just a normal, like not fraught and not a bunch of like undertones of, you know, the things we think about when we talk about the topic of money. It can be like, you know, like, uh-oh, and to just make it approachable and be like, yeah, this is something we're all dealing with. We're all dealing with it every day. And, you know, I love that it is part of, you know, making it part of the whole person, like you said.
I'm so glad. That's the goal. Just so much freedom, flexibility, permission for it to look different for us than even the person sitting next to us. Personal finance is personal. So yeah, it's going to look different for you. And just finding your best, most beneficial path with it is what we're here for.
I just subscribed. Thanks. And apparently you also have a budget planner.
Oh yeah, all sorts of resources.
You have so many things and like worksheets. We'll include links to all of this. Thank you. Thank you so much.
We've got the links in there. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you for hanging out with us today, Jill.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was so fun.
Thanks. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. We hope you like what you heard. If so, please hit subscribe and consider rating and reviewing us so others can find us. Tawny, how can our listeners find you?
You can find me at Tawny M. Lara on all of the social medias. And you can find my blog, sobrietyparty.com. Lisa, how can we find you and your amazing book?
My book is Girl Walks Out of a Bar, and it is available at bookstores everywhere and online. And you can find me at lisasmithadvisory.com. And I'm on social media at Girl Walks Out. Thanks for listening.